thank you for being on our podcast. This is we don't even know the name of this podcast yet. We were thinking the babble behind the beard, because what I was saying is that our producers actually talked about an image of where you would actually see my beard.
God forbid.
Right.
So what you're saying
is... I think it's beautiful.
Your marketing scheme is going to be based around your mug.
It's going to be based around my... Yes, it is.
That's
it'll
nice.
Be, it'll like be it. Based around my face. Yeah. It's better than Field of Screams, which is an idea that I thought of because there's this podcast called The Last Podcast on the Left, and I started listening to it just because it was called The Last Podcast on the Left. So maybe Field of Screams would be something catchy, but
yeah,
that just sounds
like get
weird.
The horror just, cult crowd.
Well,
I guess. I
yeah, but I don't I mean, want it's about it's just
kids
it's
and
about
baseball.
But your son played baseball this year, like T-ball, but
T-ball, right?
But Sam broke his arm, right? So what happened?
Well, we had a literally the day before first T-ball, or no, his second T-ball practice. We had
he went to one T-ball practice.
He went to one T-ball practice.
Oh man!
And then we had our neighborhood party, and he's swinging on the swing, and he fell off. And
so he's got his dad's coordination.
Actually, he is much more coordinated than me. But yeah, he tried to break his fall and broke his arm instead. So
yeah,
that put
see
the,
mine. It doesn't happen with mine. Mine's got it's got our Clark gene, which the women can swing around poles and their sense of balance is amazing. So
what you're saying is
I'm not saying
there's nothing wrong with square dancing in Poland. You can swing around some poles all you want. I mean, you know, swing your partner.
Yeah, if your partner's a pole. So did you meet your coach? Did you meet your T-ball coach? Did you
know
you
really.
Never met?
No, he was out on the field and the kids would show up and Sam would run out there. The first day there were like two Sams and they didn't have his name tag. So nobody knew who he was. And then he broke his arm.
Sams.
Well, now everybody knows who Sam is because he's out there in a black cast.
Right, he's the one
with
a
skeleton drawn on it, of course.
Right.
And still plugging away. It was amazing
awesome.
To me that a kid who is four, yeah, but not only that, he got out there and after one practice swing was making contact with a cast on his arm being held at 90-degree angle.
That could do and one
was,
or two things. That could give you like a completely Phil Mickelson. you know, Phil Mickelson plays left because he watched his dad in a mirror or something like that. But he's a righty, but they call him he plays left. But that cast hitting his angle, hand palm up, palm down, hitting the ball, he could get that cast off, and it'd just be like a little Mike Trout Crandall just.
Well, the
just
thing
boom,
that I liked
fence,
about it,
boom over the fence.
The thing I liked about it is it actually made him choke up on the bat a little bit. Like he kept keeping his hands real far apart, like he was golfing or something.
Like it was tight.
And then all of a sudden he got the cast on, and now his hands were real tight together, and he was choking up a little bit and getting good control of the bat.
Did you know Ty Cobb? I mean, everybody knows he was a racist, but and they talk about that a lot. Did you know Ty Cobb had a separated his bat grip? His hands weren't together on the bat. Like, he's famous for for holding the bat with his hands separated. And there was probably 3 or 4 inches separated
so
in between.
Like the,
it was like.
Is that like the racist grab on the
I
bat?
I guess that's the racist grab.
Is that
I'm
how they teach it in the Klan or something?
I guess so. It goes, he was it. I mean, that dude was it.
And this is how you beat him with the bat.
You know, the thing is, that dude was a nightmare.
Well,
but
there were a lot of nightmares.
But.
I mean, think back.
I'll tell you something funny. We watched 42. We watched the Jackie Robinson.
I just watched that recently.
It's a great movie. I love the movie. I'm laying in bed next to Jennifer, and I look at Jennifer and I go, "Man, I'd love a time machine."
Oh man!
And she goes, "You know, to watch Jackie Robinson play." I said, "Oh no!" I said, "You would see me just kind of fly in from the background and go down real low and go, "Excuse me, Mr. Robinson, would you sign these five baseballs for me, please?" And then I would fade away and disappear. That's all my time travel. Yep. I get five signed baseballs. One's for me. The other four is going to be sold, and we're going to be fine, and that's going to be it.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Everybody thinks that you have to go back in time and like somehow figure out the markets and all that nonsense. All you got to do is go back in time and get a few choice signatures across different sports.
Honus Wagner baseball card in 1910. They found one in mint condition, and it was $10 million.
Unsigned.
Boom. Unsigned. Just the fact.
Could
the
you
card.
Imagine if you got card. His signature, and especially if it got snapped in a picture on a newspaper or something, just weird. So you could say, "Oh, and here's me." Actually,
you don't believe I'm a time traveler. Here's me, Honus Wagner. See my iPhone? I mean, I'm a time traveler.
No, but there could have been some fantastic games to check out.
Oh, well, you know, the thing about Honus Wagner that always amazed me is he was this huge, like, giant barrel-chested, and he played shortstop. And the first baseman for the Pirates said one time a ball had slowed the roll to the point and it was on his throwing side, and he didn't even go glove. He went bare hand, and he went down in the dirt. And the first baseman said that when the ball hit his glove at first base, that pebbles hit the first baseman in the face
from how hard
he threw the ball going barehanded in the dirt. He said just little rocks hit him in the face when he caught the ball because of how hard. And I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that. And if you've seen a picture of him, the guys, you don't see shortstops his size. You don't see many shortstop. He was he was definitely the master race. I mean, he was definitely what Hitler had in mind. I mean, he was Honus Wagner. I mean, think about it, or Wagner, whatever you want to. But you know, when my kid was young playing ball, he's now in 12U, going into our 12U season. We had a great team this past year.
Just for the people that are not familiar, explain real quick where 12U starts and where it sits. Because I think there's a lot of people out there that don't understand.
That's true. That's a very good point.
How those leagues sort of set up as far as
right? In travel baseball, if you don't know and you happen upon our podcast and you're like, "I have no interest in baseball, but let's I'll check listen this up. This. I heard this dude's kind of funny." So, no, the thing is that the U stands for under. So if you're under the age of 12 and they have a date cutoff in travel ball, it's May the 1st. So if you're born on May the 1st, if you turn 12 on May the 1st, if you're 12 and under, you're allowed to play on that team. If you're older, you got to go up to 13U. And so that way you kind of, and it's a weird age though.
It really does make a big difference, because when you were telling me your kids' league levels and stuff, I was thinking it was like level 10.
You didn't think it was age.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And now, I had found out and really started looking into it, all the different stuff, it all made sense. I mean,
right.
You would think that at that age, you know, especially, you know, pre-junior high kind of stuff, it would make sense to try and keep them all in their little age brackets.
Well, yeah, it doesn't matter when you get to high school. When you get to high school and you're freshman and senior, you got four.
Yeah, it doesn't matter as much.
But you know what?
Developments in kids, though.
Oh, this past year was the weirdest for me, because 11U is where you got kids that are literally, you got one kid that'll come up to maybe your chest, and in 11U, you got a kid that's taller than you. This is a true story. There was this kid for this team we played in this tournament. The team was out of Wisconsin, and they had a boy on that team. And he was huge. It was like the scene from Benchwarmers when the guy's like, "Yes, I am 12. And he has this like crayon birth certificate. It was like that. So he played first base. He was actually, you know, I wasn't going to talk bad about him, but I'm going to tell you, he did something that really kind of, because I coached third base, he did something that really kind of got to me. When you're a big kid on first base, Let me tell you what he did. It's smart because I love baseball, and you know baseball, you get away. It's about what you can get away with. That's what's amazing about baseball. It's the game that kind of is not as hardcore.
No instant replays.
You can cheat a little bit. You know, as long as you don't talk about it. It's like, yeah, I threw spitballs and then he's fired.
But well, if he had a podcast or something.
But if he hadn't like, said anything.
By chance, you were a coach.
Right. So I'm sitting there and I'm watching, but because he's a big kid, he's standing on first and he's got his arm out to catch the ball, but he leans back a little bit. And then it's big. The kid's huge. So it makes the kid want to slow down going to first because he's scared he's going to run into him.
To the wall.
And he gets out. He gets out. And I'm like,
all
you just.
Takes you, that you, one you, little you, you bounce, thought process right. in their
and
head.
Boom. And it gives you that half a second. Yep. And he gets that kid out. And that's why I don't like it that much. But I'll never forget.
On the other hand. It would be tough not to coach a kid to do that.
If I had a kid that big and he was on first, I'd say, hey, lean back a little bit just to make him slow down. But, you know, no, I get it. But I had this kid. This kid named Caden, and Caden gets, you know, on base, and he finally gets around a third, and he goes, Coach K, the kid on first base has really bad BO. And I just immediately went, well, he's a grown man, Caden. He's going through what we call the change. And he's going through the change a little earlier than all of you guys. Yeah. But yeah, you smell when the change hits. And I'm telling you, he's bigger than me. The change hit him. He's a big boy. But I'll tell you a funny story. When Drew was younger, and he's 12, he's going into 12U, we're playing for a team called the Thunder. And so we can finally listen to the song Thunderstruck by AC/DC and I look like total idiots.
Oh, you gotta love it.
Like every team plays that. But you're like, you're the Cobras. But no, we're actually Thunder. You know, everybody can really get into it now. But when Drew was younger and I had first started coaching, you know, he's probably a little like Sam is in T-ball. When Sam's next level is coach pitch. And then Sam in coach pitch, since you don't know, at this level, it's just coach pitch, and he throws him three balls, and if he doesn't hit any of the three balls, they bring the tee out.
No, I remember. Yeah.
Okay. That's coach pitch, and then after coach pitch is kid pitch, and the way the first year kid pitch works is if the kid throws four balls. The kid does not, the batter does not walk. The coach comes out there and pitches three balls. Three, right? He gets three chances to hit it, whether it's a strike or not. And if he doesn't hit, the kid struck out.
Okay.
Okay. So the kid doesn't get, there are no walks.
Okay.
And then the next level is full kid pitch and walks, but no stealing. And this last year, 11U, and this upcoming year, and the 10U is your first level where there's leadoffs and full-blown baseball and stealing. Okay. And that transition is what separates little league kids from baseball players. That transition, because when you get kids that are scared to try to, when you got to pick off and work off pickoff moves at first, and you got kids that know what they're doing and they just run all over you. And then you get kids now. And what's so crazy is this transition into full-blown baseball with this transition of prepubescent kids. Because when they don't even out, they even out after puberty. But in this age, like we're talking about, you get a kid that looks like he's a part of the Lollipop Guild next to freaking Bigfoot.
Yep.
And they're the same age.
Yep.
And one's just like running all over them. And one's just like hitting dingers. Bing! You know, all the time. But when Drew was, it was probably the first year of kid pitch. He had his cup all messed up. I'll never forget it. It looked like a Gene Simmons cup, you know, from Kiss. I mean, it looked like, and we're playing over at Main Beach. And I remember seeing him over there on second base with this massive, it looked like an erection, but it was this massive cut, and it's embarrassing. And he gets to third, and Jennifer comes to him and she goes, hey, go out there and fix his cup. And I go, what are you talking about? I said, let me explain something to you. I said, let me do some explaining. You think the other team knows I'm his dad? I said, they see that
I'm... cares that you're his dad.
They see that I'm just a coach, and then I woke up and I go, oh, come here, son.
Let me
straighten your junk out in front. I said, Jennifer, the police will be here.
Maybe I should go to the ump and say, I need to tie him up so I can fix that boy's jock.
Right, excuse me, I got to fix the cup.
Please, everybody watch and film this. And so there's evidence.
You're going to make me have to go, excuse everyone, this is my son. Tell them you're my son. I'm fixing. I said, you fix this cup so we don't have to be on the news later.
Why don't we wait until he gets home?
So she did. No, he went out. The guy dug out. She went in there. Boom, boom, go. Get in there. And that's what happened. I mean, that's what happened.
You're joking.
No, she fixed his cup. I mean, right no, he couldn't. He couldn't play with the Gene Simmons erection. He couldn't. No, it was a game stopper. It was a timeout.
He was already on third, though.
No. We waited till he had gotten in and the inning was over.
Oh, okay. It's fine. I thought she pulled him off of the bench.
Excuse me, Blue. Give me a second, Blue. Blue, I need a equipment check.
I was like, boy, 10, I know there's please? Some flexing of the rules, but that man,
I need an equipment check on number 10, please.
I can understand Blue calling a timeout.
Oh, man. If I was the Blue, I'd have said something in the batter's box. Yeah, right. I'd be like, slow your roll, partner. Step back out of the box. Coach, where is this kid's mama? Is this Daddy, kid John Holmes?
Did, not help him
did you
them.
Special order a cup or is it on sideways? What's the deal? But
you were not supposed to use a coffee cup.
It happened. We had a bad experience this year. That's why we left. We were on a team that was a great team. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. You know who you are. It was an amazing team. The coaching, I got asked to be the third base coach because our head coach in the middle of winter drills said, due to health issues, me and my son are leaving. We're not going to be on the team anymore. The head coach. And they got a guy who was new that just because he had played college ball. Not because he had coached kids coached it, but he wasn't, he was a self-proclaimed wing it, and I used air quotes, wing it kind of guy, because he said, I'm a wing it guy, you're a planner. And I'm like, yeah, and we don't win baseball games because winning programs plan and they don't wing it. Little league teams wing it. There's no book called The Art of Winging It. You know, there's and I, so you could tell with my level of detail planning in baseball games.
Yeah, no, that wasn't going to work out.
That relationship wasn't going to work out because I sat on a bucket in the first tournament and I watched the other assistant coach walk up to him from my right peripheral and from my left, here comes this guy. You got a plan for the pitchers and who we're going to pitch for which games in this tournament? Nope. Okay. And I went, how was that the end of the conversation? how did that make everything? That's not exciting. You can't do that.
You got three games in one game.
You can have three games in one game. You got pitching limits.
You got to have a plan.
What are you going to do? Are you gonna hold your pitchers and not even give them a chance to get there? You're going to play to lose? Or you're getting a chance where you could run out of pitchers in the big game, but you know you're going to make it to the big game. What do you do? Have you thought about that? Guess what? You haven't thought about it. And I actually gave the guy credit when it first happened, and I didn't really know him that well. I thought he must be in deep thought, strategic thought. I thought because he didn't talk a lot.
Right.
But then, you know, the earrings, the spiky earrings gave it away. Should have, but I was not being judgmental. I was like, the guy played college ball. I mean, he could throw pretty hard. You know what he does? He could point out what a kid did wrong really well.
Okay.
He did not know the drills or what to do to fix it. And he also was the type of coach that yelled very negative comments from the dugout during the game in front of everybody. Oof. And It was a tough situation. But the coach that we have now is a much older gentleman. I mean, he's got a kid that's on this team that's my age.
So he's somebody with a little bit more experience.
He's like somebody with a younger wife and a second family. I mean, he's a little older guy. You know what I mean? This was not like a bunch of 20-year-olds with a 12-year-old, you know, how that math works. But, and he's serious. You know, he's like, your hat will be always wear forwards, not backwards. Your uniform will always be tucked in. I love you. You say what I feel.
Yeah,
you know, run for president. You know, I love that.
Yeah, because you need, I think there's, with all of the growth physically that's going on with the boys, though, there's also a lot that is growing in their mind as far as preconceived notions on different aspects of life that they are learning in baseball.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's what my
by
point of baseball.
How honest you are about what you're doing.
Listen, let me
how you treat other people.
Let me tell you something about baseball. For if you're the person that stumbled on this, and you don't understand why baseball is so, it's America's game. It is America's game. But let me tell you what baseball's about. It's about teaching kids how to be a teammate. And it's about how your individuality is fulfilled in the team environment, in the community.
Absolutely.
That your true fulfillment is when the community works together. And that's what baseball is about. And then, you know, I got to tell you something. There's more awareness now about bullying than there ever was when we were young.
Oh.
And
we didn't even barely hear about it. It was almost a joke.
Right. And teenage suicide is through the roof. Okay. Now I know it's complex, and I know each individual teen suicide is complex, but I tell you one thing I do know. I know that disappointment and dealing with disappointment has something to do with it in every one of those cases.
And not only disappointment, but the fact that if you work harder, you can have no disappointment.
Right.
Just
well, but the thing is, the game is so, it's the reason why they call it a game of failure is because it's so difficult. You're talking about a game where the guys that can hit that can get a hit 3 out of 10 times, if they're batting 300, they're Hall of Fame players. It teaches the kid how to take a strikeout and get back up and do it again. And it teaches them how to deal with disappointment at a young age that will help them deal when the first girlfriend breaks up with them and rips their heart out.
Yep.
When they don't get the grade they want, when they don't get the wife they want, when they don't get the job they want, it helps disappointment. And
absolutely,
that's why baseball is wonderful. It does. It teaches kids how to handle disappointment at a level that no other game does.
It also teaches them not only the disappointment, but the disappointment as a team. Where when you grow up, starting in university level, you're going to be working teams the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And so it shows this team building to really blend into their entire future of working on teams and accomplishing a goal.
See, I love you because your son is young and is in T-ball. When he gets older and you really find how crazy some travel ball parents can be. Like, I'll give you, how about this? How about the dad that's keeping the game changer stats, that's basing the coach, that gives the coach the information? Do you know what game changer is?
No.
Okay, so for the uninitiated, when you get older, your kid is all of their stuff, every at bat they have, everything is going to be put on this into this app called Game Changer.
So it's basically
and
a
it
scorekeeper.
Spits out all of your kid's stats. Like, I know my kid's batting average this past travel season. Talk of one player being in contention for a spot with another player, and one of those players' dad happened to be running Game Changer and would sometimes on a hit credit it to an error on the other team instead of giving the kid a hit because he was in competition with his own kid. Now, this is the type of stuff that you don't know about yet.
Wow.
This is at 10, 9, 10. And this is when you get into travel ball, 9, 10, and 11.
That's
Oh, no, that's something you deal with. That's something that happens. That's something that happens. It does.
That's amazing.
You know what? I'll tell you this. I don't know if it's true or not because I didn't keep a track. And you know what? I may be a jerk. But you know what? My kid was a good enough player that I didn't nitpick and care. It didn't matter. Like, you've got a daughter, and I've got a daughter.
Yep.
I got to tell you a story about my daughter. Does your daughter love Five Below? Because my daughter loves Five Below.
Both of my kids love Five Below. Dude. And our kids are the opposite of one another. So Stella is coming up just behind Drew. And Sam is coming up right around the same age as your daughter.
Right. My daughter's six. Her name's Holly. But you know, I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah, so Sam's five.
Right. Holly's six, and then Drew's 11, and Stella is She's turning 10. I'm just checking. She's turning 10. You don't know. Dad of the year. Okay, so, but listen, let me tell you how horrible this is. You've been to Five Below, right?
I just had to remember what the date was. Give me a break.
Yeah, so do you know, you've been to Five Below. You've been in this
place a lot of times,
right?
Every time we were trying to get Sam to do something, it was like, we'll take you to Five Below. Oh, yeah. Boom, he would do it.
Right. I can't believe our parents never negotiated with us.
No. Nope.
That's what I can't believe.
Absolutely never.
You know, I heard the funniest thing the other day. It's like nowadays, it's the two-parent. You know, my dad would go, get in the car, I'm going to break your legs. Right. And now they do this like two kids selling thing. Like one parent goes, Kevin, get in the car. And the other parent goes, the car? Yeah! And they sell it to the kid. And we do it too, you know, but God, I wish we didn't. I try not to.
I wish I wasn't so easy of a dad.
But back to my story. I know. And so do you know what they sell there? I'm on the phone with a buddy of mine, and I'm there, and she picks out this. It's a sucker. You know, it's a sucker. It's a chocolate sucker, and it's the poop emoji.
Oh, yeah.
Chocolate sucker.
Yeah, because basically I want my kid walking around with...
Right. So I'm sitting there, and I said, I cannot believe this. And my buddy of mine goes, what? And I said, you know, Holly just got this poop emoji sucker. And he says, you know... I'll never forget this. He said, you know what?
I have a bit of knowledge.
He goes, you know, if you videotape her eating the sucker, somebody would watch that on the dark web. And I go, you shut your mouth right now. He goes, it could be totally innocent. I'm just saying, just her eating the emoji sucker. There's a website. There's a website somewhere that you. I was like, dude, that's sick. That's sick. I said, now it made me do. I had to take the sucker away from her. I couldn't stand it.
No.
I took it.
We don't do poop emoji suckers.
We went and bought another sucker.
Five Below is definitely addiction.
Man, Five Below is, and I don't know what it is. I got in my wife's car the other day, and I don't know. I mean, you see the windows, you know, as a parent, you look inside your own vehicle. I mean, does it not look like your kids must sweat yogurt? When you look at the window and you see their handprints, you're like, is that? They just secrete yogurt all over everything in the car.
I don't know what it is exactly.
But it's yogurt-like.
It's the yogurt squeeze. Something about the yogurt squeeze goes through the pores. Either that guy's got a like really slobbery dog or kids, one of the two.
Right.
Because there's some film coming off of them.
Oh, it's gross. It's just gross.
Not to mention you don't even remember what the original color of your seat is.
Now you the other thing you're going to get to experience when your kid gets older in baseball is bad umpires. Now, bad umpires is not a big deal right now. I'm talking, and we need to talk about umpires. Like, we need to have.
I was a bad umpire one time. I was a bad umpire at one time. Let me
look at the list of things for me. Wait a minute. Bad husband. Bad father.
Bad
neighbor. Bad umpire.
I took care of that one really young. Actually, I was, I think, in high school, and they asked me to like fill in for some guy, and I was just walking by the park, never umpired before.
So how'd you do? You do good.
Oh, bloody awful. I was at first base.
Dude, I would be like,
first base, and my calls were like, I could feel the tensions coming off the parents.
That's fun.
It literally took me a couple of seconds before I saw what happened, processed it, and made the call. And the parents were
this guy's killing us. No, it doesn't matter. Let me tell you, if I had like a group of young umpires to mentor, okay? If I had a group of young umpires to mentor, I would tell them one thing as a coach, what you want, and as a parent, what you want. I don't care if you make the right call. I don't care if you make the wrong call, but you just make a call. You just make a call. You be firm with the call. You show, he's out. He's safe. You make a firm call, strike. You know, you do it. You don't go. You don't hold up your fist and go, say?
That's exactly what I did. Oh, and no. That was it.
Dude.
That locked me in.
That's like pouring chum in the water and just waiting. It's like, you can't go.
But I'm telling you.
You can't bring your hand up and start coming in with the fist like you're Malcolm X going word and go, save? You can't do that.
And the bad thing was, it was a kid hit just a ground ball, and I mean, the throw came in a good three steps after the guy had touched the plate, and I went to go ring him out, and I was like, no, I can't do that because he was safe. So, safe?
Oh.
Like, it was like the longest.
And see, this is what's wrong.
I don't know what was going on in my head. This is what's wrong.
He could have been, like you said, safe by a mile. And even though the other parents saw that, it doesn't matter. It's your hesitation that
killed it.
You're killing our team.
Oh, man.
You know what? I got so mad at Drew. I got so mad at Drew. And I figured out how, as a coach, how to get through to my son. There's a reason why I was his head coach all the way up until this season. And he hasn't killed me yet. You know, I cannot tell you how many assistant coaches I've had, how many other head coaches I know as peers that look at me and go, I don't coach my kid. I get Randy to coach my kid. You know, they go, like, when I want my kid to do something, I just tell him. I have an assistant that may be a guest one day named Kent. I love Kent. Kent's a maniac. I mean, he is a full-blown psychopath.
Sure.
Best, when I was the head coach, the best third base coach I've ever had. He was just a maniac. He taught me something. He goes, with 9 and 10 year olds, if the ball gets 2 inches past the catcher's feet, the chances of that kid being safe are worth the risk. Send him home every time. And I was like, man, he would get aggressive. And the moment that kid barely missed a ball, it wouldn't have to go past him and hit the stop. He would have the kid already halfway down the baseline. Go, go. And we would do drills where they would learn to listen to Kent say, go and back. And they wouldn't watch the ball. They would do it. And he was brutal. We would eat teams alive that way. He would make runs. He would make runs out of nothing. We would get the kid on a walk, get him on first, still second, still third, and then Kent would just work this, and wait and make the pitcher nervous, make the catcher nervous. Catcher make one little mistake. This catcher's a kid. He's trying to tag high. We taught him slide hard. You just slide hard every time. You don't try to mess around. You just come in, slide hard. And the moment the kid's trying to tag him, his foot's already under him on the bag. And yep. I mean, it's brutal. You got to teach. Yeah.
That's the difference between coaching these kids and bringing in somebody who doesn't have a game plan.
Oh, I call them, I have a term for them. They're talent juicers. You know, all they want to do is they don't develop your kid. They just want to juice. They just want to get that. They're like, you've seen the Dark Crystal where they try to take the gelding essence of the gelding? Yeah. They want to get that little base. They want to squeeze a little bit of baseball talent that kid's got.
Yeah.
And try to get wins. I mean, there was a moment this past season where our head coach's son was on the mound pitching, and we had two outs, and the team had made an error. He should have gotten out of the inning. Nothing, that's fine. Another error happened. At the time the second error happened, the head coach yells to his own son from the dugout with the parents next to us, "You got to do it all yourself. It looks like you got to do it all yourself. Strike this guy out." And then another error happens on the throw to first base, and he goes, "I don't know." Talking to his own kid. "Looks like you got to do it all yourself." And it was one of the times that I had said something. I'd said something to him. I did.
That sends a really bad message.
Well, I said it creates a toxic environment for
totally
your team.
Toxic.
It alienates your pitcher as your son from the rest of the team. It makes the kids that made the error feel terrible.
Absolutely.
And dreadful. You've got kids that haven't made an error, that just hasn't had a chance to make a play on the ball yet, and they're mad as all heck over what you're saying.
Sure.
And so there's nothing positive at all that comes out of it. There's not one positive thing.
No.
And, you know, and it was tough. I wasn't going back. The guy, and he knew it. I mean, he didn't even speak to me. Drew had these high stats. He had the highest stats in the batting average, on base percentage. He didn't want to come and talk to me. He was the only other main starting pitcher. You know, we had a lot of relief pitchers, but you have a pitcher that can go three or four innings. We had two. We had a kid named Evan, who's an amazing lefty. And Drew, we had a couple of other pitchers that were one or two inning pitchers, you know, maybe four or five out, but that's all you can get out of them. You know, you can find that out. When you get in the 9 and 10, you're going to find out when you got kids that can pitch. There's kids that can pitch really good for about four outs. And there's kids that they have these crazy pitch rules, count rules. Like in Little League, if your kid throws 20 pitches, he's fine to throw the next day. But if he throws 21 pitches, he can't pitch it the next day. They've got these, right. It's not. And they say travel ball is horrible because it ruins blah, 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 blah. No, travel ball just ups it. It says that you can pitch 35 pitches. If you pitch 34 pitches, you can pitch the next day. If you pitch 35, but technically the rule book says that a kid like Drew's age can pitch 85 pitches in a game, in a day. But he has to have 4 days of rest if he goes up to 85. But anyway, what you find out is there are kids. You find out just like in the major leagues. You find out there are kids that can pitch, that can probably do good for about four or five outs. And then there's kids that you find out that once they get in, like, where they're in pitch number 25, 26, 27, they start getting into a rhythm and they can go 60 pitches and they can strike out like four batters and they're just like going.
They're fired in.
Right. You can see starting pitchers. Yeah. You can see starting pitchers.
Yeah.
Now, Drew had at one point a horrendous ERA because I'd pushed so much that walks killed us because kids were stealing bases and a walk now becomes a triple if we throw a pass ball.
Sure.
And stuff like that. So he wouldn't walk, so he gave up some hits, you know. But and he's surely not the strongest pitcher. My wife really is going to say something about how much I talked about my son. but you know what? In my defense, we haven't seen each other in a while.
And we haven't. And your son, in my opinion, is amazing. Man, he really is. He has put forth so much work in his own, like, it was just part of him.
Well, that's the thing.
I hope
people know that about it. It's like, I'm not the, like, I know, I can't tell you how many times I said, if you don't want to do this, we don't have to do it. I love baseball because you love baseball. You infected me with it. And the only thing I had to do, I figured out how to get through to him when he'd get upset. He'd get rattled on the mound. And it wouldn't matter. This umpire could have called the outside ball a strike and the inside strike a ball all day long. Andrew knew it and would still get mad if he did it one time.
Sure.
And he used to get upset on the mound about it, and it would rattle him. And so you can't go out there as a dad and go, hey, you know, knock it off. You know, you can't be that. But so, you know, I used to get out there and I'd smile and clench my teeth because all the parents are looking at me. And sure. I'm like, hey, you need to straighten up right now and get your shit together. And that, you know, that wouldn't work. But I figured out what would work. I walked up to the mound. I said, listen, I'm about to grab your face and kiss you on the mouth as hard as I can. And he'd go, what? And I'd go, in front of everybody, I'm about to kiss you on the mouth. And he's like, oh, Dad, don't you do that. And I said, then calm down. Step off the mound, count to 10. Or I'm going to come up and I'm just going, mwah, 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 mwah. I'm going to just start kissing you on the mouth in front of everybody. Your team. And he went, okay, Dad. You know? Dude, he immediately backed down.
Yeah, but you know what's funny, though? It's, yes, you gave him a threat, but really what you did was you pulled his mind out of the moment. In having that little conversation with you, his mind came to ease anyway. Because
you're trying to break the cycle, that downward destruction.
You're getting his mind off of, he's coming out to yell at me, he's coming out to scold me, and then all of a sudden you come out, you change gears on him. Now his mind forgot all about his pitching.
But anyway, and you know, I tried T-ball with Holly. And that didn't work. Holly,
yeah, my daughter is the least coordinated.
Holly,
little thing.
I don't think Holly is that much of a team player. I think Holly's an individual sport kind of gal.
I think maybe tennis,
she likes tennis. Something like she, somebody, yeah, she's yeah. not like she's like move. You know, she's not.
She'd be charging the mound.
You know,
I think.
You know what? She's oh man, she'll be like that video. I don't know if you've seen this video. There's this video, and it's excuse me, it's probably older. But it's a video of this the softball game where this umpire keeps calling balls and keeps walking them, and everybody's getting mad, and they call a timeout, and he's like making a point, and the bases are loaded, and he's walking runs in, and the other team's getting mad, the parents are yelling, and so the coach calls timeout, and the whole team gets together on the mound. And then they break apart, and then when they break apart and the game resumes, the moment that girl goes into the windup, into what I see as the hardest fastball she's ever thrown, the catcher turns and moves out of the way and lets the ball hit the umpire. And I don't know if you've seen this video.
Wow.
Like, I don't know. I mean, like upper chest, upper collarbone
like
hits the umpire.
Right where it needs
boom.
To.
Yeah, boom. And the moment that it happened, that umpire, I mean, you can tell, it hit him hard. He got up, he took two steps away, took a breath, got his bearings, looked at the pitcher, you're gone. Looked at the catcher, you're gone. Looked at the coach, you're gone. And no, actually, he looked at the pitcher and said, you're gone. Looked over here, and the other umpire, who was the second umpire over at first base, is coming over from first, cutting off their coach, and tells that woman coach, all right, cuts her off, says, you're gone. Take the pitcher, catcher, and the coach, kicks them all out of the game. It's awesome. It's an awesome video. But I cannot believe that they hit this guy. But
that
you can.
Is pretty amazing, though. I mean, that's taking.
I mean, women are vicious.
Let's just say women are vicious.
We can't be putting those women out teams. Women team sports gotta be hard.
A little bit.
Oh man, women have a hard time working together.
They say men's football is violent.
Dude, women. Oh man, women are something else. You know what? I saw an amazing sight on the way here to record tonight. I was driving right down Main Street in, was it down Main Street? Anyway, it was past downtown. Yeah, it was. It was down Main Street, almost to where our church is, okay? So when I'm driving down there, I look and there's police. There's police. Actually, where Health Bridge is, I had to stop where a police car was coming out and turning, going up Main Street to meet up. And so I'm driving by coming here, and I look over, and all I see is two things. I see a house, I see the police talking to a woman, and I see a bunch of dudes' clothes and stuff all over the front yard on the way here. I saw men's dress shirts with hangers thrown out in the yard, and I saw like sock drawers out in the yard, and she's standing on the porch talking to the police. I don't see a dude.
Oh no.
I don't see the dude.
The police are probably keeping that dude under lock and key if they know what's good
but,
for
but him. But I'm telling you, women are vicious, and as Bill Burr says, it's because you can't hit them. You know, it's not socially acceptable to hit a woman, so they can just say and do what. And as Bill Burr, I don't know if you ever listened to him, but he says in one of his things, imagine what dudes would be like if it wasn't socially acceptable to hit us. I mean, guy walking out with a protein shake, you just slap it right out of his hand. Nobody would care. He wasn't going to beat you up. He goes, that's what makes, that's the thing about it. Not one time was I hit in the face. On the way home, I said, maybe I could handle that a little bit different. it's good for you. It's good for you. It can be painful, but yeah, it's good for you. But, man, so I don't even know how much time we got.